You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
How are you feeling after that, Matt?
I feel a lot better than Bob.
Extra Time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Get lost. Get lost.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental from actually Vacaville, California. I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partner in soccer, David Goss. It's just the two of us today. Just the two of us. Every time we do
this. The good old days, right?
I can't help myself. I didn't think I would do it, but then I knew I would do it and I had to do it. How you feeling, man? How you doing?
You're in the suburbs, dude. It's a dad joke. That's your life now.
It's true. I'm like watering a lot of plants. I'm sitting in the backyard with a beer. There's a pond here with koi in it. It's a wonderful life that my wife and my son and I are leading for the time being. Look, we have a lot to talk about today, including some long-awaited news from the league and the MLS Players Union, who ratified a new collective bargaining agreement on Wednesday after, we all saw contentious negotiations, and Commissioner Don Garber said so himself, that played out publicly, and you saw that included a possible lockout. The deal got done, though, and the upshot is that a return to competition is coming, even if those details remain in flux. We know there will be a tournament in Orlando, or at least that's the plan. What that tournament will be, when it will be, still TBD, but we'll of course keep you updated there and cover that on the show in depth. Today we're going to talk about that. We're going to hit the mailbag for the ABCs of Extra Time. Shout out to the Twitter follower that hit us up with that. More importantly, we're going to chat with Chicago Fire forward CJ Sapong about what's happening in our country right now and the world as people of all backgrounds fight for justice and equality for the Black community. CJ, as you know from listening to this show, he's a free thinker. He's a thoughtful dude. We're so happy he's joining us. Before him, though, we're going to talk to Cesar Lopez, who we both know from his time in the MLS office. He is the chief administrative officer for Orlando City. You may have read his op-ed at OrlandoCity.com. It was amazing. You should go read it. Go bookmark that right now if you got your phone or your computer open. But before we start all that, before we get to the soccer aspect, I just want to start again by reminding you why every headline, news report, tweet, conversation, eyeball in this country is focused on the same thing. George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, Botham Jean, Eric Reason, Tatiana Jefferson, Philando Castile, Betty Jones, Walter Scott, Tamir Rice, Eric Gardner. I could spend the entire show saying those names. Pause. Think about each of those names as people, the people that they were, fathers, mothers, sons, daughters, siblings, friends, coworkers, people in your life. Maybe you. Black Lives Matter. We cannot mince words about this, and we won't. Extra Time stands for something. We hope it does. We're working toward that. You may be thinking, boy, it's weird for two white guys to have this conversation, to which I say, maybe that's the problem. The responsibility cannot be on Black folks to do this alone. We must educate ourselves. We must learn. We must challenge ourselves and our loved ones to be better. This is just the start, and I'm sure a lot of us participated in Blackout Tuesday. I know I did, and I know I'm reminding myself every second of every day that I haven't done enough, and being aware and speaking once is not enough. We have to embrace being uncomfortable. I'm doing that. I feel uncomfortable. We have to grapple with guilt and shame that comes with examining our personal histories with a more critical eye than maybe we did before. I feel guilt. I feel shame. I've been silent when I knew what was happening in front of me was wrong. We got to educate ourselves. We got to learn. We have to challenge ourselves and our loved ones to be better. It's just a start. But look, I will be better for it. The sons my wife and I raise will be better than me. So we remind you of that. You can't escape that. It's in front of you all the time, and we're working towards it, Dave. We're trying to do our part, and this is just a little bit of that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been, you know, we spoke on Monday, but obviously this is something we've all been thinking about over the last few days, and I hope for most people over the last few years, their entire lifetime. But if you haven't been, now is the time, and there's no reason to not do it because you haven't. You always start. And I think one of the things I've thought about is I'm not a leader in this space. This isn't my expertise. And I went to a rally on Tuesday. You can hear helicopters that have been over my apartment all day because George Floyd's brother is holding a vigil two blocks away from my home. And there are leaders in this space. There are experts. There are people who have been fighting, who understand how to fight. We need to amplify them. And we need to use our platforms to do that. And I'm proud that we're going to use this show to do that with Caesar and with CJ here today. But I think everyone needs to do that in all their spaces. Don't be scared to have conversations in your life, but understand that there are people who know what they're doing. There are people who have been fighting, and we need to follow those people. You need to continue to gain knowledge. You need to continue to learn, to continue to study. And I think that, you know, there's a lot of emotion right now. There's a lot of power. There's a lot of energy to this movement that will die down to some extent in some way. And what happens next is more powerful than what's happening now. Continuing to create change, to create actual change. Because this isn't all mental. This isn't all just what's my mindset. A lot of it is the system that we live in. So donating money to politicians that you believe in, donating money to causes that you believe in, donating money to organizations that have already identified problems or are going to come out that identify problem is a massive part. Donating time to them as well, and then giving them space to create their message. I think all of that is key. It's a lot that's been going on in my head. I think you talked about a little bit, you know, what we've done on this show and what people do in their minds. I think I owe an apology to these fans that a lot of what we're talking about is stuff that has always fascinated me. I am a history major. You and me, you know, we bring up the Iraqi national team as much as possible. We love these things. And I don't know we've brought them into this show as often as much as we should. And I think I apologize to the fans for that. And I think we've gotten a lot of feedback from the show we did on Monday. That is what's going to keep us doing this, because this is your show. And I think a lot of people want to hear the things that were said and hopefully the things that are going to be said on this episode and going forward. But continue to send us what you think. Continue to send us what you want to hear, because this is your show and you control so much of what we do. And we're going to make every effort on our end going forward
to reflect that. I think that's really well said. And look, as part of this process, the introspective side of it, I just want to acknowledge that Extra Time, this podcast, has not done enough to be representative or inclusive, whether that's in the host of the show. You know that, you know, in large part of the history of the show has been four white guys, or the guests. We can and we will be better. We have to be. Please hold us accountable. Please tweet at us. Please email us. Please reach out. Please say, this can be better. You should talk about this. Some of you already do that, and I am sorry that I've not been as responsive as I should have been. One thing that we can do, and in my personal reflection, I've thought a lot about what we did in Atlanta around the All-Star Game and what we were able to do for soccer in the streets and that organization and the amount of money that Continental, in conjunction with Extra Time, was able to donate. And they're doing amazing work. And that was awesome. And it made us feel good. And we were proud of that, but we didn't follow up. And so it's time to start following up. Once a month, we're going to highlight a community organization of some kind within the soccer world, ideally, or related in some way, that we can educate ourselves and also you about, but we can also support. So with CJ Sapong being on today's show, I just want to say right now, we've got $350. Doesn't sound like a ton. It isn't a ton in the grand scheme of things, but it's something. We will match up to $350. The host of Extra Time donated to the Sacred Seeds, which is CJ's nonprofit that helps basically alleviate food deserts in Philadelphia. So if you would like to be a part of that, if you would like to donate anything, $5, $10, $50, if you just want to come in and say, I got the full $350, wow, props to you. If you want to help us go over the $350,
do not stop there.
That will be incredible. And that will be something that we can all be proud of. And I hope that every single month, we as a community can get behind something that we believe in that will help people. So DM me, DM Extra Time, at Extra Time, email us. If you want to be anonymous, whatever, that's fine too. We will make this happen.
Or just tweet at us. Yeah. Let us amplify what you're doing.
And if you have organizations that you think should be supported, same thing goes there. All right, that's enough from us. It's time to listen, as we said. And let's bring on a man that I want to listen to in this moment, Cesar Lopez, the Chief Administrative Officer at Orlando City. We knew him from his days at the league, now down in his hometown representing. Cesar, welcome to Extra Time.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me.
Let's just do it, man. Let's just, I'm stepping back. Dave, I know you're stepping back. it's time to listen. I hope everybody read your letter at OrlandoCity.com. It was powerful, powerful stuff. I highly recommend it. And I'm just curious where you think this conversation is, this moment in history is, where it needs to go. What's on your mind, man?
A lot. And I say it's really been a roller coaster of emotions over the last, you know, when we, you know, I was sitting like the rest of the world and watching what was transpiring in our society, and I couldn't believe my eyes, right? It's taken some time to process. I'm not even sure that has completed yet. You know, I think I'm still in the process, but like I was watching the news like everybody else and started thinking about how our club, how Orlando City, not only Orlando City, but Orlando generally can be a beacon sort of for change. And I started writing that letter because I had so many emotions, right? It was really an outlet for me. And I thought to myself, like, we're here again, frankly, as a person of color, as an executive in our organization, you know, I sat back and said, we haven't made much progress. We're here again. And that's been something that has really kind of stuck with me. And when I started drafting that letter, you know, it was really intended to go out to our staff, but our CEO, Alex Leitao, thought that we should use our platform on a bigger scale and let the world know how we feel. You know, it's kind of frustrating, but you know, just knowing that racism exists isn't enough, right? We have to be able to do and take action. So this isn't new. This isn't the first time we're dealing with this issue, and personally, not something I've had to deal with in the past. But I hope this is the last time. I hope we're at an inflection point for our community and our world.
One of the things you wrote in the letter was a conversation of how to give space, opportunity, deserved opportunity in the workplace for people, for Black men, Black women, for people of color, of all genders, of course. Have you thought about that more specifically from your experience working at the league office, as a lawyer working for Orlando City, of what can be done in a workplace to create that space?
Absolutely. And it's a great question. I think, you know, it's an area that we're really focused on. One of the proud things that I get to oversee at our club is the human resources component and making sure that we're making effective change. We have one of the more diverse front offices probably in sports, but that's because it's a representation of our community. Orlando is a pretty diverse town, and our office and our stadium is located in a diverse area of town. And so we try to be as representative of that as possible. You know, our community is, and I can't sit here today and say like I have all the answers, right? But I can sit here today and say that we're committed 110% toward working toward the problem. You know, unfortunately, Orlando is kind of equipped to handle this scenario. We've had our fair share of tragedies, and we have a reminder every day in our stadium of the 49 lives that were lost from the LGBTQ community and the Latin American community. And so now it's our time to step up and try to make effective change in the Black community as well, and make sure that they're represented, that they have the outlets, that they have the communication platforms to help with the issues around injustice and racism and inequality.
Cesar, do you have people reaching out to you within the club or within your own friend group or within your family? And when you have those more personal conversations with people, you know, what are you thinking about and talking about in those moments? If for instance, you removed Orlando City from the equation, what are you saying? What are people saying to you? What's sticking with you?
Yeah, so to answer the first part of your question, yes, a lot of people have reached out to me, not only in our community, the community members, our staff, certain members of our staff, our part-time staff, our game day staff, those folks have reached out to us, MLS colleagues in and around the league at the front office level, on the technical side, on the business side, have reached out and expressed their appreciation Even our own players and players from around the league have reached out and said, thank you for that. And so the other day I was walking my dog around the neighborhood and some stranger was just like, thank you. And so it clearly resonated with the sentiment that the folks here in our community have. It is important, but when we're having these conversations and when I'm having a discussion, I'm no different than any other person of color, right? And I've had my own experiences in this space, so it's personal for me. But it is personal for us as a club to try to make sure that we're making effective change and that we're committed to that long term. It's not about a letter. It's not about stating the obvious about whether racism is good or bad. For us, it's really about taking action and making effective change. So we've already started that process internally with a number of departments collaborating on trying to figure out what's the best outlet, what's the best platform for us to make an impact. And frankly, you know, I think from a league perspective, and I'm not speaking on behalf of the league, but you know, it's an opportunity for a lot of our clubs and a lot of the platforms that exist in and around the North America to take action now. And that's really what we're doing. We're trying to call to action anybody and any club and any sort of platform that has this opportunity to add to the public discussion. They need to do it. Silence isn't enough. Action is. We're in action mode now, and that's what I'm just trying to convey through that letter.
I know it's not your expertise, but you do have a legal background. We do have to out you as a lawyer right here real quick. We didn't mention that in your title. So much of this is about the system, about the way it's written, about the way it's carried out from a legal point of view. From that side of you, what have you seen over the course of your life, your studies? And maybe can you give people some guidance of how they can help create change and how they can change the society we live in?
Well, I look at, and it's not just from a legal perspective, as a human, right? Every person has an opportunity to be a leader and to affect change. I look at leadership as it comes in all sorts of forms. And so we can't sit here today and wait for the elected officials to figure it out, right? From a leadership perspective, you know, no matter where you are in your society, your community, you know, if you're in a school, you see somebody doing something that is inappropriate, it's your chance, it's your opportunity to take action and to make change, no matter where you are. And that's frankly how I feel when I think about this as a society issue. It's a human issue, right? How do we treat each other? And that's something that we want to make sure that we're keeping at the forefront every day.
I thought one of the most powerful things that we discussed on the last show came from Charlie. And, you know, having him on this show and getting to know him has been one of the great joys of Extra Time for me over the last year. But Charlie was very hopeful that this is the moment, that this is a time of unity, that this is when the momentum that, you know, the Black community certainly has been waiting for, but society at large has needed to make this change. Do you feel that same hope, and where does it come from for you, if so?
Absolutely. I 100% agree with Charlie on this one. I think if we're looking at the demonstrations that are taking place around the world, and I say around the world, that shows that there is real impact, that this not only this one event, but there have been several events that none of us have ever heard of taking place around the world, that there is a bubbling up of not only frustration, but it's hope for change. And I think that as long as we commit to making sure that the actions that we're taking are for the good of that change, then I think we're in a place where I want to be hopeful that I can look at the next generation when I'm retired and we can say, look, this was the inflection point for our society where things never went back to the way they were, right? This was the chance for us to make change. And in the history books, people will say, were you on the right side of history or not?
Well, I want to thank you, Caesar, for joining us, for sharing. I know we jumped in the middle of your day and just wiggled our way into a tiny, tiny window. But before I let you go here and ask you if you have anything left to say, I want to encourage people, go to OrlandoCity.com, read Caesar's piece, read his letter. Yes, it may have started as an internal thing, but it's so powerful for all of us. And right now we're in a listening, educating, and yes, action mode. So go do that. Take that time. See, is there anything that sticks out to you that you want to say, that you need to say before we let you get back to doing what you do best?
No, I appreciate you guys utilizing this opportunity to make sure that people are communicating. At the end of the day, I think that's the big thing that we need to be focused on is open communication. And the folks that are in privileged positions need to use their platforms to make sure that they are creating that opportunity so that we're listening on both sides and that we can eventually come out of this better. So thank you again for the time.
Thank you, Caesar. We appreciate you, man. We're listening. Have a great day. Best to you in Orlando City, all right?
Take care, guys.
Huge thanks to Caesar for joining us here. Powerful words from him, and I hope everyone is listening as well. CJ Sapon coming up. Before we get to CJ, I do want to have one quick correction, which is it's not just the hosts of Extra Time that are contributing to that $350. It is producer Anders, who you all know and love but barely get to hear from, mostly only when we rib him for fun. So
he'll be donating in Swedish kronor.
Yes,
but we'll accept it.
We don't know
anyway.
The exchange rate on that one, but if you don't get the same opportunity, so please give it to us in greenbacks. That would be ideal. Let's talk return to play. And we don't know any details yet. Commissioner Don Garber, in his address to media in announcing this deal between the Players Union and Major League Soccer, said that he was not able at this time to give further details. There's a lot to work out. We know that. But we know soccer in some form is coming back, Major League Soccer. I'll just start, Dave, with kind of my thoughts. I've felt a lot of heaviness, and rightfully so, in the world around me, whether it be COVID or now the movement taking place. I think that this is, for me, an opportunity to sort of rest my brain for a couple times a day, to recharge myself for the bigger conversations, but more importantly, to see our players express themselves, because this league is, it's all about the players. They're the ones who make the product on the field. They're the ones who make the magic. They're the ones that we talk about every single week. They're the ones that set the storylines and the playoff chases and the MVPs and the moments that spread around that you just think, my God, how did he do that? Or, you know, my God, the beauty with which this team is playing or this project. So in this moment, I am just thankful that we get to see our players do what they love to do and what they've done their entire lives. And I wonder about what the product on the field will look like. I can't make any predictions about it. And we'll ask CJ what he thinks, of course, but it's going to be difficult. They've been training alone. They've been outside the normal sort of parameters that they have lived within as professionals, where they can give their best because they do X, Y, Z. And I know they'll do everything to give their best in these moments, but I am curious to see how it'll go. I'm curious to see how the logistics will work. I know that both sides are doing all the work required to keep people safe and to make this come off as a success with whatever parameters you want to put around that. But I'm just happy that once a day, twice a day, three times a day, however many times a day I get to see Major League Soccer players do their thing on the field, I'm thankful for that. And I look forward to seeing that happen whenever it does.
Yeah, I think question marks is, you know, number one, just we don't know anything, so it's hard to really break down. But I'd agree with you, and I'd say, you know, in my experience, both as a fan and then now working around the league, it's a family to me. And it's nice to see that the people that I've worked around and covered and have gotten to know and friends with, some of them, are going to get the opportunity to do what it is that they love to do and bring that little piece of that to the world. So I'm happy for them if they're happy. And I think there's going to be a lot of question marks. And I think once we get some answers, we can start to do what we do on Extra Time, which is break down the left back overlap with Doyle for 45 minutes about whatever target winger and whatever fake formation he's created and whatever term he's pulled off from the three people on Twitter who said, you know, I can't even think of a soccer thing right now, but yeah, whatever.
It feels like ancient history. I mean, there's all, you know, preseason, we did all the previews. I could have named every single depth chart back to front, every storyline, everything to think about, everything that might be a question or a conversation point. I feel like I'm going to have to do some deep diving because it's not on the tip of my tongue anymore. I'll just put it that way.
I would agree with that.
We'll see what happens, but I'm so happy that soccer, at least our soccer, is coming back. I mean, we had a question from Andrew in Winnemucca, Nevada, asking who we consider the favorites to win. I mean, shuffle the deck and throw it up in the air, man. You know, I think the teams that had something from last year and had an understanding together will have the best opportunity here, regardless of what their training situation has been. And you have to remember that every team has had different training situations dependent on their locale, dependent on what the rules are and what the parameters are as far as COVID-19 in their home space. So some teams are training in small groups. Some teams are still in individual training. Some teams just started individual training. So I think teams like LAFC, teams like Toronto FC, teams that have established identities and established cores are going to have the advantage here. And by the way, we didn't mention there's $1 million prize money on the line. So that's a nice chunk of change for somebody at the end of this thing. Who it will be? Boy, it's the same as any other MLS season, man. If I professed to know, I would be lying to you. So I really don't know. We'll see as it gets closer. Of course, there'll be preseason. They'll have to get things going as groups and then move forward. But all that's sort of TBD on timeline.
I'll just add this one thing, and I don't know how related this is, but this is kind of what we're going to be doing because this is unprecedented. Was I actually covered, I worked for the Celtics production team going into the year that the NBA had the lockout, which I guess was 2011. And one of the interesting conversations I had actually with Doc Rivers and his staff privately was they mentioned that the last NBA lockout, the games then get condensed, similar to what we'll see here, right? And the schedule is weird. You'd think it would be young teams and young players that are the ones who get maybe the advantage there because their bodies bounce back. And they said it was the complete opposite, that experienced players who understood how to manage their energy levels and manage their bodies were much more successful. When you look back at, I think it was the 99 NBA season, you know, the Knicks and the Spurs went to the finals and they were both kind of older teams that sort of managed themselves through that season. I don't know if that's comparable to this because I don't know what's happening and no one knows, but it's something to think about where normally you'd think, oh, you know, a game every 4 days, the young teams are going to be the best. But it actually turns out that there's so much into this that the experience and the veteran, you know, style of how you handle your body actually probably wins out.
I'm just going to go two squares on extra time bingo for a Knicks reference there, as well as a Doc Rivers flex.
Except so, the Knicks got in the finals that year, so that's a positive Knicks reference. Which
sure, that's true.
Breaks the bingo board.
That's a blackout. That's an extra time bingo blackout. Sure. That's never been done before. It's time to talk to CJ Sapong, who of course will be a part of this. Let's get to that interview right now. All right, let's bring on now CJ Sapong. I hope you watched the Instagram Live he did with Kai Kamara the other day. It was powerful. It was important. It's about listening right now. CJ, welcome to Extra Time, man.
What's up, y'all? How you doing? Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Glad to have you here. We know you were on Banter today as well, so you're a popular man, and for good reason. You're a thinker. You've always been that from your rookie year on. I remember having those conversations with you as younger men. Before we get to the important conversation of the day, let's just start with soccer because you're coming back. You're going to be on the field. We don't yet know the details, but the Players Association, MLS, reached an agreement. This Orlando tournament is going to happen. How do you feel? What are you thinking about in terms of your profession and the competitive side of all this?
Yeah, you know, it's hard to single out any one aspect of the experience these days, but, you know, soccer is my channel to happiness, you know, and this situation as well as my platform to truly initiate the change that I want to see. So I'm very excited about it. It was a long, grueling process. And, you know, it's no secret the tactics that the league employed in efforts to really minimize the player pool. And I think it's good that it came to light. You know, that's all us players really wanted. Nobody was, you know, sitting here at home, quarantined, not wanting to go back on the field. So the fact that we feel now that it's understood the reasoning for how long the process took, we're all ready to get back on the field and go win something.
What should fans expect to see? I mean, we've never done this before. We've watched a little of the Bundesliga so far, Costa Rica, leagues that, you know, you've been off, you haven't been together much, you only played two games. What do you think this will look like?
Yeah, I mean, I have no idea. I think it's, I have a feeling it's going to be beautiful regardless. I don't know if that translates into quality of soccer, you know, because let's be honest, guys, not everybody's heads are going to be in it. You can try as you might, but I would argue that there's actually a problem if you are able to shut out everything that's going on to perform at the best of your ability. So that's will be what it will be. However, I think you'll see, especially we'll see what's going on in terms of the country and policy movements or other movements. It's a nice backdrop. It's a nice opportunity for fans to get the entertainment again, but now with a little bit of added motivation to truly see players for who they are, truly see players as human beings, not just guys on the field kicking a ball around, you know. And that's why I think it'll be good. And hopefully the quality of soccer matches the expectation. But ultimately, I think everybody involved should just be happy that, you know, that we'll be back in some type of form of soccer.
I think about it in terms of this, CJ. I love watching people express themselves on the field, and I have missed that. It has been a hole in my life. And I'm thinking of however they do this, the 2 hours, whenever it is, as a way to sort of rest my brain for the fight that matters more, if that makes sense. And when you say express yourself, I also think about you as a person, man, because when you score goals, when you do things on the field, you express yourself. Have you thought at all about how you might do that, both whether you score or otherwise?
Not at all. When we get down there and we actually can hang out with each other and actually can talk, you know, like we're still at a point right now where we're doing small group training. Even when we stop to talk to guys, you know, they have to separate us. We have to make sure we're following the protocol. So while I have my own personal internal motivation and my, you know, sentiments that mean something to me, I think the more that as players we can connect and find that camaraderie again and find that energy again, that's what's going to bring the competitiveness and then the celebrations and the, you know, guys having fun.
We'll wait for that for when it comes. Let's talk about what really matters right now. And everybody knows what's going on in our world, the fight for racial justice and the fight against inequality. We see people in the streets. We all see the news, the headlines, the videos, everything else. I mentioned the thing you did with Kai. I mean, that really impacted me in a big way. And one of the things I thought about was how I need to get out of the way and how I need to listen. And yes, in some ways develop my own voice, but in the proper time and place. So I'm getting out of the way, man. What do you think needs to be said? What are you thinking about? What are you feeling in this massive moment in human history?
Yeah, I've been repeating myself with this, and I will do it till it sticks. It's just education, understanding Black history, understanding Black culture. I think up until now, there's been a hesitancy for people outside of the Black color or Black culture to really delve deeper into, you know, the fabric of his existence. You know, I think once that becomes a welcomed thing and becomes something that people are accustomed to doing, we'll find a lot of beauty. We'll find a lot of magic in the resiliency of a people to overcome 400 years of oppression. You know, and I think that'll be the segue into understanding the beauty and magic of all other cultures, all other genders, all under other class systems and, you know, the people that are within them. It's understanding that people have been suffering and have had somebody up against them. I think up until now, most people understand what's going on, but it was kind of like out of sight, out of mind. You know, if it doesn't truly affect your day and it doesn't disrupt your entertainment, you don't really give any energy to it. Whereas now you can't hide from it, you know, and it's going to test people in every facet of their existence. And I think it's something that we need.
I wanted to give you this opportunity because we're thankful for you to come on. We've known you for a while, a chance to tell us what can we do in terms of Extra Time Radio, Andrew and David, MLSsoccer.com, fans of MLS who are listening to this, people who cover this league, what have you seen in this space to try and, you know, fix small and build bigger? What is it that you'd like to see changes in?
You know, it's more so like we can, I have many ideas on, you know, how to implement things within infrastructure that would overall heighten Black people and people around them. But I think we can take it even deeper to the root and just start with just altering our thinking. You know, for instance, with you guys, you know, you have a vehicle to share information, you know, maybe perhaps implementing some type of Black history facts, whether it's maybe it's a certain player who's maybe from Africa or something, getting creative and embedding the Black culture into the way you guys tell, you know, your story. You know, every brand out here, you know, that has a following has a story. That's what people are connecting with. So when you imbue that within that projection of your story, now your fans slowly but surely are more and more awakened, and you know, you guys will also get maybe a more loyal following, you know, because there's still a lot of people right now that aren't talking about this. You know, there's still a lot of influencers just going about their business, just posting, and that's going to be up to the people to decide if they are worthy of their attention and their money.
What emotions have you felt? Because I think there's kind of different spectrums here, and I find myself in sort of like a helpless rage all the time. And it's actually one of the things that's helped me, as you said, start to better identify, because I know the history in large part, not all of it, but enough that I should know. I've lived a life where I've seen discrimination, and maybe I've stepped up, or maybe more likely I haven't, whether it's middle school locker rooms or places like that where you should have said something that you didn't. Where do you see on the spectrum of emotions right now yourself, and how are you sort of like working through what's happening in front of you all the time?
Yeah. And even before I answer that, I want to give you understanding that you don't know what you don't know. Right. And I encourage people that are not Black to not be beating themselves up. Don't get caught in the shame, blame and guilt, because the greatest opportunity you have is the moment right now. And in that moment, you can make a decision that can literally change your journey and the way other people see it and are affected by it. But for me, the last couple of days has been a whirlwind of emotions, adding in the Players Association and MLS negotiations, talking to guys, hearing everybody's story, and really recognizing that, damn, like, as a people, we're not really set up to succeed. Even players who are paid comfortably, playing a sport that they love, are in a high risk situation of losing money and are drastically having to change the way they're thinking about their careers and their livelihood. You know, to hear guys saying, oh, I got to go back here if that happens. People having to send their families back to where they're from because they don't know what's going to happen. You know, it was stressful. It was angering. It was a lot of different things, man. But obviously, I like to transmute it into the positive. It was also an activation at like the DNA level for me, because I just so happened to be looking at different ways to empower athletes through my experience with the Players Association and with the social injustice piece kind of coming back to light, something that I've always known, but just had decided like, that's how it is. I'll deal with that when I get to where I think I need to get to. You know, it's a psychological dissonance in a way. But I'm now motivated and inspired to take all these different testimonies and take all these current events and truly excrete the negative aspects of it and see where now we can build at a grassroots level. And what I'm realizing, it's first about just building better people, you know? So that's mobilized me with my nonprofit, Savior Seeds, which does work in underprivileged communities, i.e. food deserts in Philadelphia. And it's led to ideas and visions of ways to take that same concept, which is keeping the seed sacred, like the youth, but also in our thinking, sometimes we're young too. So it's not just a child in youth, it's people who might be in their perception a little young. So it's, that is just empowered me to a whole nother level. And I now know, okay, boom, I know what I'm gonna be doing during soccer and after soccer. And even when I'm gone, I know there will be a residual effect that is perpetuating change within, you know, the environment, our country and the world. And if I can say that on my last day, I'm good. I leave happy, give you all the deuces. see you the next lifetime, whenever I show up in some form or fashion again.
Before we lose you on that, though, you mentioned the grassroots. You mentioned soccer, and you know, soccer, of course, isn't everything, not the most important, but one of the things that I notice, and I think you've probably experienced way more than I have, is the way sports gives an opportunity for everyone to compete together, but some of the ways that people view people in sports is codified racism. And it's, you know, wow, he can really stretch the field, is always mentioned when someone brings up a black forward. And I'm sure, you know, your JMU beat my Northeastern teams. I know you've been experiencing this from day one. For a lot of the people that listen to our show, they coach youth soccer. They have kids that play youth soccer. They go to MLS games. They watch these teams. They cheer. What is some of the things that you've seen that are problems in the U.S. soccer sphere, you know, in this reality? And what are some of the things maybe that you've had discussions with people?
Yeah. And again, it brings me back to that point of I'm definitely, and mind you, you know, I do yoga every day. I do Tai Chi. I meditate. So I actively in my schedule have time that I'm unplugged. That gives me the power to go through the rest of my day and see all these things. But I've gotten to that point of forgiveness, right, for all those people, because they only know what they've been taught. They are products of their environment. At the end of the day, it's from a systemic definition of this country is where it is because of white males. And that's in our history books. It's in the days that we celebrate holidays. And so for those coaches, they don't even mean to, like, you know, they don't mean harm, not all the time, sometimes, you know, but I would just encourage them to the first step is just accepting that it was not the right way to go about it. I think a lot of times people are like, I don't want to admit that I'm wrong, but I was really doing it because, you know, my best friend is black, whatever. Let's start anew and moving forward, recognize that when you call that player, man, you're just like a horse running up and down the field. It's like, do you know the different connotations that has just in a societal standpoint, a history standpoint? Even if that person doesn't know, there's other people that see you, you know, and that's how this mindset that I think boils down to anybody that's not white is in some way, shape, or form intellectually declined, but they might be real athletic. So then it kind of paints this picture of, well, because white people have intellect, they can market these horses or these assets or these, you know, and I think that's how it starts early at the youth system, and then eventually it just follows you all the way up to, you know, the highest level that you can play.
CJ, you said, you know, of course there's health issues here as far as your training goes, but I can't imagine an environment in which you spend the amount of time that you do with teammates in which you don't have these conversations with them. Have you had conversations with, and I'm just going to say it, white teammates? Have you had these things come up now, before? What are you talking about? What are you saying?
Nope, it hasn't. And that was just my choice to not make other people uncomfortable, because that's why I noticed that very early when I would bring attention to things. And it's not just social injustice. It's just socioeconomic injustice. You know, it's like, how were we on quarantine for 2.5 months and 40 million people have no job, but the stock market's getting close to all-time highs? It's like, when things, concepts are introduced to people that provide uncomfort, the, you know, first response is either fly away or fight it, right? And I would either get somebody fight me on it, or I'll get somebody that just doesn't want to hear it. Not, I didn't really get people that wanted to listen. But safe to say, that'll be happening now. I think one thing with Black people that I don't think that it's hard for other, I won't say other minorities, but definitely for white people to understand is we're always the minority. We're always the minority. We're always that one person there. You know, we're always one of two, one of three. And where white privilege, which I don't even want to say it like that because it has a bad connotation. It's just you don't know what you don't know. If every team that you've ever played for was 90% white, it's going to have an effect on the way you interact with that group of people. If it's 90% Black, you are going to change. There's very few white players I've come across that I've either seen with different groups and saw, okay, they are who they are. No matter if there's a lot of Black people, a lot of minorities, or if it's all white people. So we have to look inside ourselves first and be willing, like I said earlier, to go through that conversation and educate. And I definitely will be challenging people in general moving forward.
So. What if, and I thought one of the most as powerful, like sometimes when I'm having these conversations, whether it be in private spaces or otherwise, I tend to pause a lot because, and it's not, you know, it's to think, it's to try to rack my brain. But I think one of the things that you talked about, and you talked about that with Kai, were the different experiences that you had that maybe you had normalized that are not normal. When you're seeing what's happening now, does your brain jump back to those things? Or as you said, have you been able to sort of wipe past and move a little bit? Or do you find yourself having situations in your past or even in your present jump up and say, even this became normalized in my mind that should have never been normalized?
Oh yeah. I had already done that. So now it's just it's a twofold growth process for me, because first it was combating it, then it was becoming aware of it, then it was being angry. So fourfold. Angry about it. And then I had an acceptance to it, which is ultimately where I'm glad I'm at, but there's still healing that needs to take place from those experiences. Just to simply say that because you've accepted it or you forgot it, that it didn't have an effect on who you are is a little naive. So now when I'm meditating in that first 5 to 10 minutes, it's just all these things replaying. And when I get that feeling of hurt through my meditation, my practice, what I do is I go find that spot, you know, in my body, I heal it, and then I find something today in this moment that I can actually thank myself for, right? That I can show gratitude for, where I can show a little bit of growth since then. And that's how I've been able to actually use it to empower me even more and now not be afraid to post about Black people stuff. You know, like, that's crazy that I accepted it and I was able to move through my day and all that. But it was at the point where if one of my friends from back in my hometown posts a really highly charged pro-Black comment or post, although I agree with them, I'm in my head saying, I probably shouldn't retweet that because what, you know? So that's where I'm feeling the growth.
I want to ask about sort of the next step, not maybe specifically for you right now, but you're 31, you've been in this league for a while. I'm sure you're thinking about the next stages. I'm curious because we talked with Cesar Lopez down in Orlando City, who's part of the executives, you know, group there, about what you see in Major League Soccer, in the soccer world, about, you know, approaching Black players about their future. Because we see a lot of executives, a lot of coaches, and not a lot of opportunity for African Americans or Black coaches at all, or Black executives. Do you feel that there is enough either thought process or opportunity in those spaces, or do you see, you know, space for improvement?
There's there's about a whole soccer complex amount of space in terms of room for improvement. And you we're not dumb. Like we're all, to even be sitting on this tech piece of technology and talking to each other, like we have sense. So I think that's something, I know that's something that people had seen, but again, because it was kind of just like accepted and status quo, nobody ever questioned it. Whereas now MLS moving forward, they have to look at filling in these positions with Black, whether it's a former Black player or just Black people, reaching out to the Black community more. MLS has failed with that. And I have no problem saying it now, which I wish I had the heart to say it a month ago. But it's Black players have felt that MLS in some way, shape, or form tried to just keep the status quo. You know, you just hear too many situations of things that happen, whether it's players, people trying to be in the front office, to ignore it. So now, yeah, they're obviously going to have to do that. And we will see. If they want to do it right, they should probably reach out to Black players in the league and see what their thoughts are, see where they went wrong. You know, again, it's the admittance. Putting the statements out are great. Retweeting the Black player stuff is great too. But until I see like that vulnerable state and that state of humility, it doesn't mean much, you know. It doesn't do anything, right? A retweet, yes, a lot of people see it. Okay, boom. Oh, you guys care now. I want to see the full length feature that they do on so many players in this league of this Black player, his culture, his history, how we MLS are going to work with him to help other Black people in their communities.
CJ, I thank you so much for your time, man. And I know that we had said we were going to do 20, and sometimes these things get away. But I think it's important for not just us being here with you, but for everybody listening in at home. And before I bid you adieu, I just want to give you the opening again to say anything that may be left on your mind that you feel needs to be said that, you know, we weren't perceptive enough to ask you.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'll just use an opportunity to kind of double down on a recent call to action I made where I'm encouraging people, no matter what your class, gender, race is, to reach out to collaborate. That doesn't even have to be just me. I definitely think when we look at the systemic problem that doesn't only affect Black people, it affects a lot of people. Financial literacy is a big thing. Health, wellness, and nutrition is another huge thing. And then also just mental health, character growth, you know, those things. I just kind of want to throw those terms out there as much as I can to get that back into the conversation, you know, because if we can ensure that our mind, body, and spirit is healed and the potential is maximized, then we can look at our socioeconomic structure and be in a better place to, you know, implement the movements, the actions that will truly affect change.
At Big Africa 88, if I'm correct, CJ, on Twitter, I believe you put out the form for people to go do that. So do that if you're interested. Sacred Seeds, how can people support that, CJ?
Yeah, so Sacred Seeds, you can follow on all platforms at thesacredseeds.org. Obviously, I'll give a little quick spiel. We're just an organization that utilizes sustainable agriculture in urban areas to educate, nourish, and empower communities.
There you go. Actually, one last thing. I want to say congrats, man. I just I hit that follow on Instagram. Congrats on I'm getting engaged, if I'm wrong about that.
Thank you. Yeah.
I'm not here, but
no doubt.
That's a big congrats from the Weeby family to the soon-to-be Sapong or hyphenated. My wife didn't take my last name, is it right? So whatever you guys are doing and however you're feeling it, I'm happy for you. So
appreciate best it.
To you, all right?
Thank you, man. Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Take a deep breath, reflect, think. I mean, I think this is something that's if you're like me, I guess, is sort of on your mind all the time right now. And that can be really difficult. And I think CJ sort of alluded to it. Sometimes you do need to have some time to reflect. So if you need to take that, do so. In the meantime, if you have something to say to us, you know how to get at us. 401-206-0MLS, extratime@mlssoccer.com. Of course, we're checking those. We're watching out for your messages. And as Dave said in the beginning, we got a lot of stuff, reaction from Monday's show. David Nskoki, the legend, hit us up. He had a perspective that I want to share here, and we'll just have his words tell the tale. As a white person, guys, I know I've been taught a version of U.S. history that always gets freer and more democratic, but that's simply not an accurate representation of our history. But I know as a teacher, my white students are often confused by why things don't just get better over time. Andrew mentioned the term systemic racism on Monday, and I think that's a key part of this. Racism is systemic when racist outcomes are incentivized by the political, economic, and social structures of our society. Since my students are high schoolers and often new drivers, I use a car metaphor. Systemic racism is like having bad alignment in your car. If you just, quote, drive normally with bad alignment, you're going to get into an accident. Nothing leads to the problem. Or excuse me, doing nothing leads to the problem. In order to avoid that accident, you have to actively do something to respond to the alignment problem, affirmatively turning the wheel in the opposite direction. Our society has been structured over hundreds of years to incentivize racist outcomes through housing and school segregation, voter disenfranchisement, legacy admissions to colleges, universities, unequal access to banking and food resources, and even to green space so kids can play soccer. Unless and until we actively fight against that history, our society will continue to produce unequal outcomes, even if no one said any racist word, did a racist deed, or thought a racist thought. But that was really insightful and helpful from David Nskoki.
Yeah, and right in line with what CJ said.
Nskoki, sorry, David Nskoki. I forgot. Sorry, David. Oh, no, he's in Skokie? Jeez, man.
He's in Skokie, which I think is actually outside Chicago, and he is a Chicago Fire fan.
Oh, nice.
So he has big expectations for CJ, but that goes to what...
Hold on. Did we meet David in Skokie
outside the All-Star game?
Yes, that's what I thought.
He came up and was like, I don't know if you know me, and then introduced himself, and I think we both hugged him, and we were like, dude, you are an All-Star. You are a legend.
Yeah.
I was pretty pumped about that while we were throwing out t-shirts randomly. But yeah, CJ mentioned that. Perception is everything. And a lot of times it's unconscious and it's innate. And I think he talked about that in soccer, which is something that I'd love all of our fans to just process later when they have an opportunity. And I've had to process it as well. And of just how you view players and the small stereotypes that are just always put out there. And it's a global game. Some of these stereotypes are not American, they're global. And they're problems that we have everywhere. But you need to fight them in your mind and then fight them out loud, you know, in your communities and in your space. And I think that's a great message. I wanted to move on from there to Narisco Valencia, who sent an email and said, hope you're safe. I will never know what being Black in America is like, but being a son of immigrants, being half Mexican, half Portuguese, I've been discriminated against from my Mexican side many times, even within my own family. Having conversations in the open is the start, and acknowledging there is a problem. Voting is next. Education and policy change only happens when we speak up about injustices and make leadership changes. Yes, protests have happened in the past, but my hope is this time is different. Thank you, guys. And I think we got a lot of great messages like that of people's experience. Every single person's experience is different. Even for me, the person who grew up in the house next to me, even from our own siblings, right? Like, we all have different experiences, and it's been a treat to read what we've gotten in the mailbag. And I appreciate it a lot. Tom in Portland says, you guys should have Jeremy Abobase on the pod and let Charlie run the interview. I would give the show to Jeremy Abobase if he wanted to. I think he's busy playing at times, but as often as he wants to come on,
meantime, you can hear from him. His Medium post was one of many, but I think one of the most powerful. I mean, he simply has a way with words that I think is really admirable. So go check that out. MLS tweeted it out. We tweeted it out. Follow Jeremy Abobase. Read that piece. It's a great piece.
And then we've got back-to-back emails here from David Elliott, who said, Charlie, thank you for sharing. Those stories need to be told. Everyone needs to see the ugly so we can recognize it and stop it. Charlie, thank you also for your words of hope at the end. I was feeling really down. Listening to the podcast and your words coming from you with your experience gave me hope. If you're still hopeful, then I can follow. And he's normally calls himself David, hopeful, hopeless and hopeful in Seattle, and he said less hopeless in Seattle. He then followed that up by standing with me and Anders. He didn't put me in, but I need to be in there because I'm the only one who voted for the 2014 Seattle Sounders. He started out and said, I love me a good Doyle rant. The one about the 15 Red Bulls versus 18 Red Bulls was excellent. So thank you to the, quote, absolute morons who enable this. He said, the bad. Supporters shield truth or Doyle. The 2014 Sounders won it. The Galaxy, no. Supporters shield truth or Doyle. The 14 Sounders won the single oldest, the second oldest single elimination tournament in the world. The Galaxy couldn't even get by the Railhawks. Don't say Seattle couldn't do it in a one-off tournament style if they did. Supporters shield truth or Doyle. The 14 Sounders had two trophies that they competed for during the season. The Galaxy won. I'm disappointed. Supporters shield truth or Doyle. Extremely disappointed.
So, yes. Thank you.
I think this is where I was coming from. Yes. This is what I was saying. Which Doyle had his whole Obafemi Martins thing.
To go
which
to
I
the,
think was unfair.
The absolute morons part, I wish we would have had that in front of us just to, you know, try to take down Doyle a peg or two, who, by the way, if you're wondering why he's not here, is enjoying some much-needed time off. But we'll wait till he gets back, of course. We'll finish here. Little T on Twitter. He had a ETR ABC summary sheet, which took him, I'm sure, far too much time, but was hilarious and awesome. So thank you so much, Little T. A is for the AT&T studio. B is for brackets, which we will finish the greatest team of all time bracket when it feels a little bit more appropriate. We are down to the final four. C is for Continental, who we have to thank for giving us this opportunity, this platform, and supporting Extra Time for so many years now. D is driven by, he says that one's weak. I'd say D is for Dave. I mean, that was pretty easy. E is Evolution Podcast over Vlog. I'm not sure what that even means. The only vlog I think we ever did was the Extra Time at the Movies, which if you remember that, then you are an old school listener of this show.
That's pretty me.
F is for fans. Yeah, that's old. G is for greatest teams of all time. He doesn't have an H. He doesn't have an I. So if you have those, hit us up. K is for kits. L is from live from New York, New York. It's not live, but it is from New York, New York. M is mailbag. N is national team nightmare. Fair. O is other podcast promotion. Yes, we should do more of that maybe. P is partners in soccer. Shout out to all my partners in soccer. I love all you guys and girls, Susanna included, though the call-up sort of poached her. There's some podcast promotion for you. Go check out the call-up. They've got a great episode coming this week. Q is for quarantine edition. We're still doing those. R is for rancid drummer Brandon Steinekert. It's been a long time since he was
there. We're here for RSL. Yeah.
We sing this song all the time in inappropriate situations. Yeah, I know we did.
We've had him on the show.
Yeah, I know. Way back in the day. S is for scoreboard, which you shouldn't have done because scoreboard doesn't exist. We all know that. T is for trash bag of swag, which is still at the office somewhere. U is for underperforming bladder. Charlie Davies needed a pee break. Classic moment. V, VAR debate. W, Warsaw references. X, 11, as in best 11. Y for YouTube. And Z for Zlatan debate. And there you go. He says it's his idea, but we should do it for the whole league. And we'll think about that. But it seems like a lot of work. In the meantime,
can I throw this up here for anyone who likes that scoreboard reference that's watching on YouTube? I was watching an old sports documentary, and this is original Simon Borg in the old office hosting, I don't know what we called it, the Daily, the thing.
Yeah, it was the Daily.
Beardless. And it was amazing. I was watching, by the way, I hadn't watched in a while, or I don't think I ever finished it, the We Must Go Bob Bradley Egypt documentary. And in it, one of the clips is Simon Borg saying, Bob Bradley's been let go from the U.S. national team, but is rumored to take the job for Egypt. And I was like, whoa, that voice is familiar.
That is familiar. Different era, man. What a wonderful era it was.
And if you don't watch on YouTube, watch on YouTube now.
Yeah, go watch this on YouTube. Anyway, big thanks to Cesar Lopez, the chief administrative officer for Orlando City, for joining us. Go read his piece. And huge thanks to CJ Sapong for sharing his time and his thoughts with us. An introspective guy, a smart guy, someone who thinks in a different way. And I always appreciate everything that CJ has to say. And finally, if you would like to be a part of this opportunity to match up to $350 from the two of us and Anders to the Sacred Seed, that's CJ's nonprofit in Philadelphia that helps alleviate food deserts. Please let us know. Get at us. You know how to do so. We'd love to have you be a part of that. We'd love to blow away the $700 that we potentially could raise for his organization. So holler at us. In the meantime, enjoy your weekend, everybody. Take some time to relax, to decompress. We all need it. And we'll see you on Monday.